Thanks, Aaron. Happy Sabbath, everybody. As Mr. Elliott mentioned, Mr. Scriber has asked Laura and I to shift our allegiance, if you will, and to begin to consider the Northern Arizona congregation as our home church. And Laura and I have agreed to do that, so starting in November, we will be spending typically 2 and possibly 3 Sabbaths a month up there. And so we'll be seeing a little bit less of you, and we will miss that, but we'll still be here some of the time. A few months back, I began what's sort of become a small series of sermons on the topic of addiction. We started out with looking at why we should be interested in the topic. And, of course, those messages are available online, or they will be when they get the servers back up. But today I'd like to talk about one aspect of that process of recovery. We've started looking at some facts about addiction. Addiction is, of course, very prevalent. It's all over, and it comes in so many different forms. And it's only going to get more and more prevalent as morality standards relax all around us. The world becomes more secular. There's no thought of God out there. Now, of course, many addictive behaviors, probably all addictive behaviors, lead to damage or involve damage to oneself and to others. And we've talked about the fact that each of us in this room is in a recovery process as we fight our addiction to sin, as we try to come out of this world and stay out of this world, as we fight to honor our Father in heaven and obey His will in our lives, and as we shift our thinking to choosing His way versus choosing our own way. Because, of course, we all started off thinking that our way was the best way. And it's a long, lifelong process of coming out of that. We've looked a little bit at some key thought processes that lead an individual to, first of all, acknowledge that they need help. And today we're going to look at one critical success factor in the treatment of addiction. Whenever we look through corporate documents, mission statements for organizations, there are these things called critical success factors. Without this, it's not going to happen. So today we're going to look at one critical success factor in treating addiction. Depending on how this one component goes, the recovery process for an individual can be hampered, it can be derailed, it can be sabotaged, or if it's done well, that recovery process can be greatly assisted and helped. And so today we're going to look at the topic of an effective support group. My titles seem to be getting longer. This one is entitled Addiction Recovery and Effective Support Group. But that's how it goes. We've known of people who have gone to support groups, who have suffered with physical addictions, who've gone to support groups. I've spoken of, has needed to go to support groups. And sometimes they tell tales of, well, I went, or my relative went, and they showed up, and there were all of these people who were not really into the process. Maybe they were just there to punch a clock because the court had said, you have to go there. And they couldn't wait to go outside behind the building and engage in their addiction. And, of course, somebody walking into that environment is going to receive no help. They're going to be hindered. They're going to be back amongst that element of giving in to that pull. And I'm sure that there are a number of groups out there where the exact opposite happens. There's qualified help. There's people committed to the process of helping, committed to the concept that recovery can take place. And, of course, in part, you and I are looking at this today because this room right here and rooms full of God's people around the world are designed to be just that support system, that support group for the people of God. And depending on how we receive people, depending on how we interact with one another, that's going to determine a lot the extent to which that recovery process can begin to take place or can continue to take place, whether we are assisting God or whether we are hampering what God is trying to do in the lives of people He's calling out of this messed up, crazy world. I just have three elements that we're going to look at today, three critical elements of an effective support system. And the first one, let's turn to John chapter 8. I did look at a few websites and took a little bit of a survey, and a lot of these were... That's not where I got necessarily all three of these points, but I did look around at some of the organizations that act as support organizations. In John chapter 8 and verse 11... We're just snipping in at the end of the story. Jesus is speaking to the woman who had been brought in, and accusation had been made against her. And he said to her in verse 10, "Woman, where are your accusers? Has no one condemned you?" And Jesus said unto her, "Neither do I condemn you. Go and sin no more." A first critical element of an effective support system is that it must be non-condemning. Jesus didn't say to this woman, "Hey, no problem. It's all good. No one's here to accuse you. You can go." No, he told her, "Go and sin no more." It's not that he didn't judge her actions. You and I are called to be able to judge the difference between, okay, this is okay, this is not okay. But he said, "You are not condemned." He told this woman who had been sinning, no questions about it, he did not condemn her. He didn't wink at the sin again. He didn't say, "Well, you know, there's no witnesses, so you're good, you can go." You and I have to have a hard line against sin. But that line doesn't extend so far that we look at the sinner and say, "Well, you're beyond hope." We must be non-condemning. Those who come in and seek help are in a fragile state. As I was thinking about this topic, it's been easy for me to... Coming to church is a joy for me because... these are my friends. These are people I've known in many cases for years and years. So coming to church doesn't have any dread in my mind. It's great. I get to touch base with people. I get to interact. I get to do fun things like speakers club, and I get to contribute and hang out and be in choir usually when my voice is better than this. And I've got deep breaths. I've been coming to Phoenix East. I was here back once upon a time when there was just one congregation in Phoenix. But again, it's easy for me. And I began to ponder this months ago, speaking with somebody, because for them it wasn't easy. This person had a problem, or had a past, shall we say, that in their mind was very visible. It was visible to everybody. Everybody knows what I've done because it's right there. And for me to dare to show up to church, for me to even get the nerve to come to church, I don't know what to expect. Are they going to pounce on me? Are they going to say, "Why did you do X, Y, and Z?" And I was just about to get in the car, and I couldn't make myself do it. And then the next Sabbath, you know, I got dressed, and no, I couldn't do it again. And maybe one time I got right up to the neighborhood, and I was just right near the building, and I couldn't do it. those who seek help are in a fragile state, are feeling very aware of their shortcomings. If somebody was to walk in here and we were to assail them, I tell the story, I brag about the Salt Lake congregation, even though this has been years ago and they're probably a whole different mixture of people now, but one time we were on vacation and I had gotten my times mixed up, or I had forgotten to account for the time change, and so we came smoking into the motel parking lot, and well, look, I guess services started 15 minutes ago, and I was in my shorts and my flip-flops, and maybe not flip-flops, I was driving, so I was probably wearing shoes, but I was like, well, I'm not presentable, but if I stop and I change clothes, I'm going to miss that many more minutes of this service. And so I decided that we would be brave, and we just walked in and sat down, and they were so loving. Nobody looked at us like, you know, with a wrinkled up nose, and they just welcomed me. Even though services were going on, several people said, oh, hi. You know, they mouthed the words, hi, come on in, you know, sit over here. And again, they had that very welcoming and warm attitude, not condemning, not, whoa, you can't come in here with your toes showing, or, you know, you can't come in here with your knees visible. Because I was a little bit trepidatious at that time. Like I say, usually, wow, I've got no concerns about coming to church. These are my friends. But I was a little bit trepidatious that time. And they had the fabulous response that I've hopefully described. If I had walked in and they would have given me dirty looks or something, I don't know what I would have done. I would have maybe gone out and changed, or maybe I would have sat down and just felt uncomfortable and been distracted from even hearing the message. Maybe I would have simply gone away and skipped services. Those are the sort of things that were less likely for me to do, since I'm a long-time member of God's church. But still, a condemning posture just makes people want to flee. Especially because we're talking again about people who are very vulnerable at life. And we'll start in Isaiah chapter 35 and verse 1. It says, the wilderness and the solitary place shall be glad for them. The desert will rejoice and will blossom and bloom like a rose. It will blossom abundantly and rejoice with joy and singing. The glory of Lebanon shall be given unto it. The excellency of Carmel and Sharon, they shall see the glory of the Lord and the excellency of our God. We have a promise that there is coming an age when God is going to be visible. God is visible to everybody. He's going to be providing these tremendous physical blessings. He's going to be reaching out to all mankind at this time. He'll be directing the events. In verse 3 it says, strengthen the weak hands, confirm the feeble knees. Say to them who are fearful, be strong, do not be afraid. Behold, your God will come. It says, with vengeance, meaning he will keep you safe. God is coming with a reward. He will come and save you. Again, as I mentioned here, we draw courage and we draw strength from God and his message of hope, that hope in that coming time. And it's our job to do what we read here in verse 3, to strengthen, to pass along that strength. Strengthen those who come in vulnerable. Be open to helping, asking God to help us to see how to help those, again, who are in weakness and who are vulnerable. In verse 6, it says that at this time, the lame will leap like a deer, and the tongue of the mute shall sing, for in the wilderness waters will break out and streams will break out in the desert. Again, we read of a time when the captives will be freed. The former frailties will be gone. The incapacity to follow God's way will be taken away because we will be able to help and give counsel. Those frailties just won't be there anymore. The eyes of the blind will be opened. The ears of the deaf will hear. In verse 10 it says, the ransomed of the eternal shall return. We've talked a little bit about the fact that addiction is a form of slavery. We read about a slave will know God. And you and I, who are formerly enslaved, get to know Him at this early stage of the game. And we now have that chance to become free of sin, to be becoming free of sin, and they will have that chance later. The ransomed of the eternal shall return and come to Zion with songs and everlasting joy upon their heads. They will obtain joy and gladness in place of their former sorrow and sighing. Again, hopefully you and I experience that joy, that, like King David referred to in Psalm 51, restore unto me the joy of your salvation. Hopefully we sense that joy. We comprehend God's plan in our lives, and we understand that it's our duty as God's children to be available to bring that message of encouragement and hope to others. And we can't do that if we're in any ways looking down on them, and if we're condemning them. Please turn to Matthew chapter 25. This is a sensitive topic to a lot of people. There are a lot of people who are aware of some who are struggling with addictions of one sort or another. And there is that genuine fear, and that fear is not without reason. The fear of, well, if I open up to somebody, what am I going to hear back? What am I going to be told in return? In Matthew chapter 25 and verse 40, again, breaking into the thought here, we're talking about Jesus as King of Kings and Lord of Lords coming back and welcoming some into His family. And we see just who or just what those people are in verse 40 and in the surrounding verses. In verse 40 of Matthew 25, He says, and the king shall answer and say unto them, truly I tell you, that when you did any of these things unto one of these, the least of my brethren, you did it to me, or you did it for me. When we are able to, with God's help and guidance, assist in somebody's recovery, we are serving God the Father and Jesus the Christ. We are doing a critical service. And it's those who are serving as God gives opportunity and loving at this time now during their trusted to do them then, that will be welcomed in by our elder brother here, like we read in verse 40. In verse 34, it says, the king will say unto those on his right hand, come, you blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. Again, these are the people who are going to hear that said. The people who have been looking for ways to serve, who have been careful not to offend one of these little ones, as he says elsewhere. Those who have been loving and serving now. So again, a very critical element is that we need to be non-condemning. A second critical element is we need to be willing to listen and to give encouragement. People's lives are messy, and they're probably, without exception, they're probably a lot messier than any of us knows, any of us dreams. If we were to find out what's going on in the life of any one person in this room, we would probably find out, wow, they're going through some really hard, heavy stuff that I had no idea about. And if you recall from an earlier message that I gave on this topic, is that one of the steps in seeking help is when a person comes to the point of realizing that their life had become unmanageable. You and I who are baptized probably got to that point where we said, wow, I can't do this. I need help. My life is such a mess, and there's no way it's going to get fixed without God's direct intervention. But again, people's lives are messy. We have to be willing to listen and to give encouragement. And you should be prepared for the idea that if you get somebody to open up to you, you might well hear things that will make you feel uncomfortable. They might tell you things that sort of make you want to run, because that's our physical. We want everything happy and safe and just sort of superficial. And you might hear things that will make you feel uncomfortable. We need to be prepared for that. We need to give prayer ahead of time. You know, Father, please help me to listen to this individual without interrupting, without making wincing faces, without just running away because I don't know what to do. Many people don't want you to solve their problems. They want you to listen to their problems. They want you to... Well, let's take a look at James chapter 1:18. They want you to be an active listener, a reflective listener. Sometimes it helps to sort of say back what we think we just heard and give the person a chance to say, no, that's not what I was saying, or, yeah, you're right, that's what I meant. In James chapter 1 and verse 18, quite right. Verse 19, we are advised. He says, my beloved brethren, let every one of you be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath. And I guess I keyed in on verse 18 because, of course, verse 19 starts with wherefore. So he's saying, well, based on what I just said, so in verse 18, we're told that God's preparing you and I to be first fruits, to be in the first resurrection. But he warns us in verse 19 to be ready to hear, to be listening, and not always think we have to solve it, not think we have to jump in and give the perfect answer. If you feel that you're being led to a particular answer and you've considered it and prayed about it, then perhaps you're right. But we need to be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath. We need to be active and reflective listeners. We were looking at the topic of listening in Speakers Club last time, and I sort of mapped out what is a season of Speakers Club like? How much speaking does a person actually do? And when I tried to quantify it and sort of with relative to the amount of time that we spend in club, in Speakers Club, we spend about 3 to 5% of the time speaking. And we spend a lot of time listening. We should be listening to, when we have the topic session, we're listening to the questions so that we know if we have something to say. We listen to the other responses in case that's going to give us something, some more food for thought. We're listening with a very specific purpose and intent during the speeches so that if we're called on to give advice and to evaluate the speech, we can then do so. So the 95-97% of Speakers Club is actually listening. And hopefully it's quality listening. It's listening with a purpose in mind. And that purpose, just like the purpose that I'm speaking about right now, is to help a brother. How can I help? How can I add to the club? How can I add to the cohesion and strength of the body of Christ? A successful club, whether you're talking about just a single evening or the whole season, a successful club is one where the members are there to grow personally and to help their fellow club members to grow. A successful support group like we have here, support system, is when we're here because we know we need help, and we're here because we want to be sort of the little tools in God's toolkit that He can use to help others. A couple pages forward in James chapter 5, and verse 16, we are told, confess your faults one to another, and pray for one another, that you may be healed. The effectual, fervent prayer of a righteous individual avails much. You and I, when we're close to God, when we're drawing close to God on a daily basis, repenting, asking Him for His input, how can I help, what should I do, what should I say, when we're praying for one another, it has a great impact. And again, it takes a lot of courage for somebody to walk up and open up to you about some difficult thing in their life. Just like it took for this individual I was referring to come to Sabbath services in that sort of terrifying unknown of how am I going to be received. It takes courage to open up, but it's a step in the healing process. So that's why the advice here is to speak to one another about these things. We, of course, need to be selective. We don't just, you know, close our eyes and pick somebody, and okay, I'm going to go over there and talk to that person about my deepest, hardest struggles. We ask God for help in that as well, in helping us to understand who we might wish to have that discussion with. In Romans chapter 1, in verse 9. And when I pulled this up on Esword, there was 10 or 12 verses. It seems like right near the beginning of each of these epistles, each of these letters, are fairly similar words. But I picked on Romans chapter 1 and verse 9. He's telling these people, okay, so Paul is out and he's abroad and he's traveling and he's met these people, he's worked with them, he's helped them, he's loved them, but he's not there because he's running a circuit or starting churches and setting up leaders and moving on. But he wants them to be encouraged. He says in verse 9, for God, my Son, that without ceasing I make mention of you always in my prayers. It's important to pray for one another. It's, again, this critical element was partly about giving encouragement. It's so encouraging to know that a brother, a sister, a dozen people are praying for you. Talk to somebody who's been really badly ill, who's been on a prayer list and who's heard maybe from dozens of people that they've been prayed for and ask them if they felt encouraged. You better believe they felt encouraged. God's people derive great encouragement from knowing that the saints are praying for them. So just as Paul said, hey, you people who I've sweated and toiled over and tried to establish you in the gospel of Jesus the Christ, I'm praying for you. That would be a great encouragement to them. And you and I need to make sure that we are praying for people. Now, we can, of course, pray for God's people in general and for specific things that we know about. But the more details we know, the more detailed our prayers for them should be. So do pray for people and tell them. Why not? Tell them, hey, you know that thing we're talking about? I just wanted you to know that I've been praying about that several times this last week. They will be greatly encouraged. And it's our job to provide that courage, to be building up the family, the cohesion and the strength of the body of Christ. So again, that critical element number 2 that I mentioned was that we need to be willing to listen and to give encouragement. And a third critical element that we will just look at very briefly is the element of confidentiality. Every one of us can probably think of a time when we talked to somebody about something in confidence. And then later on, several other people spoke to us about that, and we realized, well, I guess that wasn't kept in confidence. We know intuitively that we need to be trustworthy. When we are trusted, we need to be trustworthy. In Proverbs chapter 11, now, we just had a little presentation at my high school the other day, and one of the topics that was addressed briefly is the topic of mandatory reporting. If I, as a teacher, hear certain things, certain urgent matters, if I hear that somebody's, that a student is being abused, or that a student is engaging in some illegal activity, or I don't have the option of just sitting on that information, unless I wish to be at risk of being sued and prosecuted and losing my teaching credentials. And there are certain times when it's necessary to pass information along. If the person is a danger to themselves, if they're a danger to others. Most of what you and I struggle with is personal and is not of that nature. And of course, I'm just referring to my role at the high school level. But in Proverbs chapter 11, in verse 13, it says, "One who goes around telling stories reveals secrets." And again, we've probably all been in that situation where we thought we were confiding in a trustworthy individual, and later on we found out that the story was all over the place. "But he that is of a faithful spirit conceals the matter." You and I need to be of a faithful spirit. You and I need to be ones who can be told sensitive information and not just run around and can't wait to share that with somebody else outside of where that information would be helpful. Let's turn to Matthew chapter 13. And that was my only scripture on the topic of confidentiality. We all know that we're not going to be useful if somebody's thinking about unburdening themselves, and they look in my direction, and they say, "Well, not going to tell him. He's got a reputation for just blabbing every piece of information he gets a hold of." We know that's not a way that we can be helpful. We need to be able to keep confidential matters confidential. In Matthew chapter 13 and verse 24. Some parables here. It says, "Another parable he put forth unto them, saying, The kingdom of heaven is like to a man who sowed good seed in his field and went away." God calls people into his church. God calls people, reveals to them the truth. At some point in time, they show up. That is what we just read here. A man who sows good seed in his field. But in verse 25, well, some other people show up too. Some other people show up, whether they're inspired by just thinking that this is where they need to be, whether they're inspired by what, who knows. They show up too and can be tares among the wheat. And it's difficult to tell who that is. Again, like I mentioned earlier, sometimes a person might go to a support group to find help so that they can climb up out of this pit of troubles that they're having. And they find out that, well, some of the people at this group really aren't on the same team. Some of the people at this support group that I showed up for are just there because, again, the courts made them come, so they're just getting their little card stamped and going back to their probation officer, and and they're just sort of going through the motions. Growing up in the church, I can remember listening to the radio program, driving across the country, and you could hear it on, just seemed like every station practically. And Mr. Armstrong, at the time, was very forceful in his message of what God was doing. And part of that message was the fact that there are hard times coming. There's going to be tribulation. There's going to be, and he could paint a pretty vivid picture. And a number of people back in those days showed up because they were of the mindset, well, I'm going to get my card stamped saying you're a member of Worldwide Church of God so that I don't have to go through the tribulation. They didn't think that as a conscious thought, but again, God wasn't necessarily calling them. They were being sucked in by the human aspect of that message. But as I was pondering the whole idea of the wheat and the farmer, because as we continue the parable, it says that in verse 26, when the blade was sprung up and brought forth fruit, then the tares appeared also, and the servants of the householder came and said unto him, Sir, didn't you sow good seed in your field? Why then are there tares? And he said unto them, An enemy has done this. So the servants asked him, Would you like us to go and gather them up? And of course the root comes up out of the ground too, and you can't exactly stuff it back in the ground. Verse 29, he says, No, lest while you gather up the tares, you also pull up the wheat with them. He says, Let both grow together until the harvest. And in the time of harvest, I will say to the reapers, Gather together first the tares, and bind them in bundles to burn them. But gather the wheat into my barn. So God's going to work it out. God's going to work it out. As I was pondering this parable last evening, and I try to keep in the front of my mind the fact that God is somewhere up here, and I am somewhere, you know, if my arms were longer, I'd reach farther down. And I was thinking about the wheat and the farmer, and I was thinking, well, he doesn't say, and so the wheat decided to pull up the tares, or the wheat looked around to try to find out, okay, which of us is wheat? If wheat had some kind of intellect, then the intellect of the wheat compared to the intellect of the farmer is a pretty good comparison to, here's God up here, and here's me seeing nothing but the surface in a lot of cases. God didn't say, okay, you wheat, you figure out who's who. And again, we're warned not to be condemning. It's not the job of the wheat to figure out, okay, I'm a tare, I'm a wheat. In Hebrews chapter 5, we're supposed to be in a maturing process. We all start out at a certain place. None of us starts out at the exact same maturity, spiritual maturity level, because God works with us in many cases for some time before we are even called into the fellowship. But in verse 12 of Hebrews chapter 5, he says, For when the time has come that you ought to be teachers, you have need that one reteach you the very foundational principles of God. And you are become such as are not ready for meat, but need milk. We're supposed to be, again, growing, maturing. We're supposed to be developing discernment. In the beginning, we draw strength from the group. We come in and we are the weak, because we've just come out of this world and it's more fresh, the wounds are more fresh for us, and we draw strength from the seasoned members. But we are admonished to grow. And we can be that resource who can help a new person or a person amongst us who we find out needs assistance. We're supposed to add strength to the group. We're supposed to be those who are ready to move on to the next level of, okay, I'm no longer a taker, or at least not as much of a taker. I've been given so much by God and by the brethren that now I'm ready to begin to give back more. We started in John chapter 8. We're going to go back there for a moment. We are all in this together. There is no pecking order of sinners. Well, okay, people who commit that sin, they're not as bad as the people who commit this other sin. And we've all earned the same reward of having committed sin, which reward, of course, we don't want. But we all have access to the same throne of grace. We all have access to the same forgiveness. And in John chapter 8 and verse 7, so we're back in this story that actually occurred, where these individuals were trying to bring an accusation. Let's force Jesus into doing something so that we can bring an accusation against him and we can discredit him and we can stop him from being a thorn on our side. But verse 7, it says that when they continued asking him, he lifted himself up and said unto them, "Let he among you who is without sin throw the first stone at her." Again, you and I, the woman who was in front of them and all of this crowd of, I'm sure, well-dressed and very impressive men, were equally sinners. We are in this together. And we all have an obligation to be not thinking of ourselves more than we ought, not thinking, well, at least I'm, you know, like that prayer we hear about the Pharisee and the tax collector. I thank you, God, that I'm not like other sinners, like this Pharisee, or this publican, rather, over here. There is in this Al-Anon book that I had been looking at, they have a list of 12 steps, they have a list of 12 traditions, they have several lists in there. Their tradition number 2 states that in our group, there is but one authority, a loving God. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Let me read that again. In our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Those of us in the ministry understand that we are here to serve. And it was interesting to see that in this physical organization as well, this organization of people who doesn't believe exactly what you and I believe. But that's a good place to start from, not thinking of ourselves more than we ought. We are all in this together. Let's turn over to Philippians chapter 2. Now, certainly we know that Jesus ordained offices, and certain individuals are put into certain offices of service. And so it's not that everybody has the same abilities, the same spiritual gifts. I'm simply making the point that we all would be under the death penalty if not for the sacrifice of Jesus the Christ, the offer of salvation. And so from that standpoint, we're on the same level. In Philippians chapter 2 and verse 2, he says, "Fulfill my joy, be like-minded, having the same love, of one accord, of one mind." We need to be motivated by love. By, again, what is love? Love is outgoing, love is self-sacrificing, love is serving as we obey God and Jesus the Christ. And we need to be unified, of one mind. And again, he says in verse 3, "Let nothing be done out of vanity, but in humility let each esteem others better than themselves." Verse 4, he says, "Do not each of you look out for just his own interests, but every one of you look out for the interests of others." Again, that's what we're called to do, is to look out for one another, to be asking God to help us to be useful, to be tools in the strengthening of the body of Christ. In verse 7, we read about Jesus. "Jesus himself made himself of no reputation and took upon himself the form of a servant and was made in the likeness of men." Again, an unimaginable drop in power and esteem and prestige. that he took on for you and I in the concept of looking out for who would become his brothers and sisters. And being found in fashion as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient unto death, even the death of the cross. Helping you, helping me, helping the next person who's going to be called into this room or into God's family in whatever town, in whatever building, had a cost. Jesus paid a cost here, a cost of his prestige. Not that that was something he esteemed greatly, but a cost of his physical comfort. He was willing to do something difficult. Helping is difficult. Again, if you're in a conversation and people and somebody's opening up to you, it might not be comfortable for you. But we are called to be willing to endure discomfort as Jesus did. It will cost you. Christ was willing to get dirty. He came down here and sweated and got dirty and suffered all sorts of emotional and physical pain. And just like our older brother, we need to be willing to get dirty in our service to God. In verse 12, the continues, it says, "For these reasons, my beloved, as you have always obeyed, not just in my presence only, but now much more in my absence, work out your own salvation with a proper kind of trepidation, a proper kind of concern, because you and I have a high calling, and we can't just let our behavior be any old thing. God has standards. So we have to take heed about how we conduct ourselves. As has been mentioned, my family and I will not be in Phoenix every Sabbath, but I would like to invite any people who are struggling with issues, any people who have loved ones who are struggling with difficult things, or people who've gone through difficult times and have come out the other side, so to speak, and have experienced some successes in those recoveries and would like to be a resource to others, I would like to encourage any of those people to speak with me. Our burdens are a lot easier when we have a support system, when we can share one another's burdens, they get easier. I'm not an expert by any means on the topic of addiction, but I'm eager to listen. I'm eager to pray for people, to pray with people, and to give counsel as I am able. But we need to all commit. All of us need to be committed to being non-condemning, to making ourselves available to listen, to seeking God's wisdom, because if you come and talk to me and all you get is me, you're going to be disappointed. If you go and talk to somebody and all you get is their opinion, you're not going to be served. We need to be seeking God's wisdom. We need to be committed to giving encouragement, and we need to make sure that we're keeping matters confidential when that's appropriate. So let's all be seeking to be tools that God can use to build His church.